Hello everyone, welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Monday, 7th of October, and this is me, Abdul Majid Awan, and I have my beautiful co-host with me, Farah Bashir. And we have two big stories today that we're going to talk about. But before that, how was your weekend, Farah?
Let me tell you, eventful. How was your weekend?
I was in Ras Al Khaimah, and I, for the very first time with my own eyes, saw the Al Marjan Island development. And I can just say that they're building a behemoth at that place, the Wynn Resort. They're working 24 hours in the night. The construction with all the lights looks magnificent. So let's see what they build actually. They're supposed to complete it by 2027. But with the work that's going on and this hotel staff where I was, they're like, they'll finish it by the end of 2025.
I mean, we both know that, you know, the UAE as a country is a very fast-paced country. Yeah. So whatever, like, decision or whatever, like whether like the road works that are happening like right now in on Sheikh Zayed Road and everywhere in Al Khair, and the list goes on and on. It's like very fast. It's just like they do it and like, oh wow, they're gonna be done in like no time.
Yeah, so it's always like they tell you 6 months, but they finish it in 1 month.
That's true.
So 2027 is the date for that opening, but we'll soon see it that maybe it'll be completed by 2026. Let's talk about the main stories for today. Saudi Arabia's PIF, the Public Investment Fund, the wealth fund of the Saudi government, eyes a bigger stake in Nintendo. Nintendo is a Japanese gaming platform. Everyone knows Mario Brothers, Super Mario, Mario Kart. All the games about Mario are made by Nintendo. Then everyone knows the console that they have, the Nintendo Switch, which is their latest model. So Saudi Arabia already owns some part of it, but they're trying to get a bigger stake. And this was reported by the Japanese news agency, Kyodo. So what is happening is Saudi Arabia is exploring the possibility and they want to increase the stake in Nintendo. Currently, they hold 8.58% shares. And PIF's vice chair of the gaming unit, Prince Faisal bin Bandar bin Sultan Al Saud, he says that he indicates that any further investment would be a friendly one. They won't go for a very hard takeover of the gaming company. They'll just do it in a friendly way. So it doesn't mention that how much more stake they want. They want a majority stake or minority stake. But right now the news is that they are going to increase their stake from 8.58% to we don't know what. So
I mean, this is like major now. Of course, to everyone who's wondering, like, why does this matter? Because PIF's increasing involvement in global gaming companies, including investments, as Abdul Majid mentioned, in Nexon, Capcom, and Tecmo, highlights Saudi Arabia's strategy to diversify its economy and gain influence in entertainment and technology industries, which, by the way, is I've mentioned before earlier that esports, you know, and gaming has been really major in Saudi Arabia.
First ever esports World Cup just finished in Riyadh like 1 month ago.
100%.
So that they're investing a lot in gaming and they understand that it has a very big potential.
100%, and it has a lot of influence. And by strengthening its stake in Nintendo, PIF aims to further entrench itself with the gaming world, potentially impacting the development and direction of one of Japan's most iconic game developers. Because, you know, gaming has been everywhere. Women game, boys.
They're very famous,
It's a major part of
And their move from away from oil, that is mainly the thing that they're going everywhere. We always talk about it, that Saudi Arabia is not just investing in tourism or real estate or the big three or four things that everyone is doing to move away from oil. They're investing in literally everything that they can find.
Yes, they have a vision,
which
we have talked about several
Saudi
times.
Vision,
the 2030 vision, and they are working for it. And you can see that is being implemented because, as you said, like, you know, with their investment with gaming is major.
So this is one of the biggest news that came out throughout the weekend. The second biggest thing that happened was there's a project in Egypt, which is a Mediterranean Sea seaside project. It's called Ras Al Hikmah. It is being developed. And ADQ, the company, the third smallest sovereign wealth fund. Basically, Abu Dhabi, just to give you some context before the story, Abu Dhabi has three main wealth funds. That's ADIA, Mubadala, and ADQ. ADQ is the smallest in them as far as capital is concerned. So ADQ has asked Momodon, Modon is another Abu Dhabi-based developer. They've asked Modon to come on to the project and start the development. Mm-hmm. So the out of the 170 kilometer square of development, 50, the first 50 will be done by Modon. And this was announced when His Highness, the president of the UAE, recently visited Egypt, and the whole presentation was given to him, and this announcement was made. And it was a very significant move by the president of the UAE going to Egypt, because recently we saw that Saudi also announced $5 billion for Egypt. They didn't tell how many phases or how many tranches of money are going there, but they just said that Saudi Arabia is giving them $5 billion in the first phase. We don't know how many phases are going they're going to be or how much money Saudi is going to pour into Egypt. Because Egypt right now, because of the Suez Canal, is facing a lot of monetary issues. Their foreign reserves are going down, their capital is going down. And in this, Saudi and UAE are playing a big role in moving money into Egypt to help them.
Yeah. Now, of course, now if a lot of people are going to be like, okay, why does this matter? You know, as you mentioned, that this is a very significant milestone for both ADQ and Modon, but it expands their development footprint beyond the UAE, because it's expected to transform the area into a smart, sustainable, and inclusive urban hub with a total investment of $110 billion.
That's not a small number.
That is a huge number as well, because the project will generate substantial economic growth for Egypt, as you mentioned earlier. It is facing a lot of decrease in that, and that project is going to help improve the economy because it will be adding $25 billion annually to its GDP by creating around 750,000 jobs.
In Egypt.
Egypt. That is not a small number. It's literally a very big number.
Yeah, and as a tourism hub, Ras Al Hikmah, they're trying to develop it as a tourism hub. So it'll have airport, international airport, so you can directly land there, enjoy there, and then leave. High-speed rail and an extensive hospitality infrastructure. So it's not just going to be two or three resorts. It's going to be a network of resorts that they're going to develop there. And apart from that, it'll also have a special free zone. Like you talk about UAE, you have a lot of free zones. Jebel Ali free zone, the Dubai International Airport free zone. There's 100 free zones in the UAE where there are special tariffs and special taxes for trade. They're also going to develop a free trade zone there. So what I see, there is a map there. According to that, this area facing the sea would be mostly for tourism. The area behind that would have agriculture, and then you'll have a light industries or a free zone area as well on the whole thing. The last thing that I saw was that UAE, it's just not that UAE was invited. UAE actually bid for the area. So Modon, again, we talked about it, is an Abu Dhabi developer in which ADQ and Abu Dhabi's IHE, which is the international holding company, they both hold a majority share. So the deal to develop Ras Al Hikmah between UAE and Egypt was announced in February this year with a $35 billion in short-term investment, which gave a very life-saving injection of foreign money for Egypt, because again, they're facing a lot of problems. Their Egyptian pound is going down every day. And lastly, it includes a $24 billion for the land rights. So UAE actually bought the land rights, and then the $35 billion short-term placement of money was given to Egypt. It's like a help, but UAE also is trying to go to Egypt and build something there.
That's true.
In which they own a stake.
100%. And I mean, we do know that the UAE, whenever it does see an opportunity that it can invest and maybe benefit both sides, it will be, you will find the imprint of the UAE in it.
And the best part about UAE is they always go for a win-win situation. That's my favorite part when looking at deals which UAE makes with other countries. It's always win-win. It's never they're going there and taking all the resources or building something and the local economy or the local people don't get anything. Likewise, we saw 750,000 jobs will be created as a result of this development. So it's win-win always in UAE's mind whenever they're making a deal.
That is true, as well, because I have read recently that the Egyptian pound is compared to like the dollars, it's like, you know, like
it's going very down.
It's by 50, you know, like, you know what I mean? And it's going to decrease to $10 because the investment of the Saudi Arabia and as well the UAE is going to make
help
it
them
better.
Recover.
And as well, you know, as well, apparently Google is going to be giving its
the content creators money for
yes, exactly, in Egyptian pounds apparently. So it's a lot of things happening for Egypt.
But we always talk about Middle East, and we say that these three are the biggest: UAE, Saudi, Egypt. And it's good that one of them, if they're facing a bad time, UAE and Saudi are pitching in to keep the whole region safe.
They will step in, and they will for sure implement their own, I would say, like taste.
Yeah.
You know, their own, I would say, like sprinkle.
Yeah.
So
that is it. We had two big announcements to make on this show. Please stay tuned to the show. We also have a guest. It's Anisha Oberoi, who is the CEO of Secret Skin.
Yes.
And she's a breast cancer survivor. She's an Iron Lady who Farah interviewed. And she's going to, you can listen to the interview after the show ends. Thank you so much for joining us today for a quick episode. We discussed ADQ has given moved on the project, the initial permission to develop the Ras Al Hikmah project in Egypt. And apart from that, PIF is eyeing to increase its stake in Japanese game manufacturer and gaming company, Nintendo. Thank you so much. Join us on all social media platforms. Search us by as Smashy Business. And if you missed this episode, you can always go back to YouTube and all the social medias. You can also listen to all us on all the podcast platforms, Apple, Angami, you name it, we're there. So thank you so much. It was a Smashy Business show presented to you by the Augustus Media Broadcast Network.
Well, welcome back to the Smashy Business Show. And before I introduce my guest, I want to tell you guys, we all know that the beauty industry is very expensive. And of course, you know, beauty comes with a backstory. And in light of that, we have Anisha Oberoi, the CEO of Secret Skin, to tell us more about Secret Skin. And of course, in light of its fourth year anniversary, welcome to the show. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, before we kick off, start about talking about the business, I want to ask that there's kind of like a backstory to the launch of Secret Skin. So tell us what, first of all, inspired you to start Secret Skin?
Well, I think the genesis of the story is 14 years ago in a hospital bed. I was a young girl going through breast cancer and not knowing what life ahead would look like. But I refused to die, and I believed that I could create something that would benefit women like me. Because at the time, one couldn't buy any beauty or personal care products that wouldn't impact your hormones and disrupt your fertility. Nothing existed. It was very frustrating while you're going through chemotherapy, radiation. You don't know who to ask, and you don't know where to look. So exactly 10 years later, I launched Secret Skin, which is actually a tech-enabled platform for sustainable beauty and wellness. We bring together brands from different parts of the world that are safe to use, no harmful ingredients, cruelty-free, they're pregnancy-safe. They go through a very high standard of due diligence because everything that you apply topically affects your organs and your hormones. So we started it exactly 4 years ago, and I'm very proud of what we've built in the last 4 years. We also pivoted, but we'll tell you more about that as we go through the interview. But I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself, and I wanted to create value for the community. That's what we did.
I love how you took a struggle and thought of it as a business opportunity and launched it. But a lot of that, like, How would you say that cancer has shaped your views on clean beauty?
One thing is how careful you become in picking the things that you're applying, how they affect you. And also it's about conscious consumerism, less is more. We've always tried to imbibe that in everything that we do in our customer communication, as well as the way that we pick the brands that go live on Secret Skin. So your lens gets better. But personally, I think when you've been through an adversity like that, you have no choice but to survive. And then once you start surviving, you find ways to thrive. You become more stubborn. You become more passionate and in love with life. You live for the moment. Your relationships with people change, and your relationships with yourself change. So who I am as a person and who I am as a business leader and a CEO are very close. I've never been closer.
That's beautiful. I mean, it's very inspiring. But of course, you know, like when someone launches a business, people do tend to think that it's all rainbows and unicorns.
Oh, no.
It's not, of course. So what were like the biggest challenges that you must have faced when, you know, you're launching your brand?
So I'd never run my own business before. I come from the corporate world. I had worked with Amazon for 5 years building fashion and beauty in India and Australia. Mm-hmm. So it's like boot camp. You become very data centric. You understand the customer's digital journey and you learn the tricks of the trade, but it's also very intense. You get faster, you get smarter. And while the world is evolving as technology advances and changes and the consumer changes, you're able to see those trends and patterns. And so you have that, but then you've never had the practical experience of running a business. You've never hired a whole team that you're going to pay on your own. You've never fundraised before. You've never built a deck before. You've never stood in front of investors and pitched a story where it's an idea. You don't have the numbers to prove that it's a successful model. And you have to rely on your instincts and your grit, as well as the support system. It could mean family, advisors, investors, friends, people that you invite to be a part of your own ecosystem that you have to depend on. So it's a very steep learning curve.
Speaking of launching your business, what are the things that you can expect when launching a business?
You can expect a moment where you feel, I don't know what I'm doing. And that somehow is in the back of your mind all the time. Yeah. But then you tell yourself, there's a reason why you're doing it. You believe in the idea, and you have to live in your delusion. You know how they say Delulu is the solution?
Yes, oh my God, yeah, right? 100%.
So I think you're high on your own supply, you're riding that wave, and there's a lot of fear and self-doubt, but you start to put the building blocks together, right? Mm-hmm. So you're building a foundation. So you understand more about incorporating a company, you start building your storyboard of ideas to pitch to investors, you get some working capital. In the beginning, it's always bootstrapping. So I took all my Amazon savings and put them into Secret Skin. And in fact, the week we incorporated Secret Skin, COVID hit the world. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there saying, okay, I don't know whether this was the best idea, given what's happening around the world.
Of course.
But we didn't know at the time that digital penetration would be so prevalent. Mm-hmm. We did not know that people would stop using makeup and start focusing on themselves, on self-care, and take mental days off. And then people would be on Zoom and people would focus on how they're consuming, what they're buying, and become a lot more aware of what their purchase means to the planet. So it came together very beautifully. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anyone.
Yeah.
And it was very hard in the beginning, because even though we were built on Shopify, our tech stack is on Shopify at the moment. Mm-hmm. And we knew that it was only a matter of time when this category would explode. So I did a lot of research around what consumers were buying, what brands, conscious brands, were available at the moment. And if they were not available, how much were people spending to import them? So women, for example, waited 7 weeks to get a product that they would pay 50 to 70% over in shipping and customs to bring it here, because nothing was available here. So I said to myself that if I could take a few brands and convince them to launch in this market, and if I built it on Shopify and spent the next few years perfecting the art, understanding what customers were buying, at what frequency were they coming back, what would the selection, the assortment of categories look like, how could we create content that was different to everybody else? Because the retail ecosystem here is very traditional. And there were gaps, and we saw the gaps, and we just chased the gaps. We worked backwards from what didn't exist.
I mean, it's a very smart way to think of business, think of a gap, and fill in the gap where it's needed. And you said something that's very important, which is like, it was a turning point during COVID. A lot of things changed. But what makes Secret Skin's product selection unique?
So not only do we have the brands that are viral in other parts of the world as well as on TikTok that have very high standards of sustainability practices, fair trade, ethical sourcing, ingredients that are not mixed with synthetic harmful formulations that are good for people as well as good for the environment, as well as founders of these brands that have a value system in place where it's not just about making money, but it's about creating something that will benefit the audience. In our case, mostly female customers. We started looking at brands that were not just doing well commercially, but brands that were actually, these are called independent brands, clean beauty, sustainable beauty, these are same terms. And we realized that there was a lot of this in Europe, a lot of it in the US, a lot of it in Australia, but nothing existed here. Mm-hmm. So from 7 brands at launch, we're today at 47 brands. And we realized in the last 3 years that there was a lot of demand for this category from hotels, from pharmacies, from retail stores, from spas, from salons. And we wanted to become a company with omni-channel distribution capability so that not only did we have a B2C play where the customer could just at the click of a button buy a product available to them the same day, but also be able to supply it to the large legacy retailers because they didn't have it. Mm-hmm. So that's what's unique about us. We were very conscious about whether Secret Skin should be a pure play beauty tech company or whether it should be a tech-enabled company. And we realized that in this region, customers don't really care about the tech that they use to buy beauty products. They want the ease, the convenience, they want about 68% buy directly from the brands. And this is a very tech-savvy customer that's evolving. That's not just seduced by brand value, but they're also very conscious about how it affects the environment. And they're smart. And they also want to be engaged by, you know, the whole sensorial experience of trying and sampling the product, then they want to be able to educate themselves. And also they appeal to the education and advocacy around how you're trying to build this category. So with the digital empowerment comes a very sharp lens of how they're making their purchases today. So it's a very dynamic landscape. That's what makes us different, the exclusive relationships that we have with brands, as well as how we're using the available tech enablements on the platform. It could be like we look at scroll depth, we look at dwell time, we look at what kind of content is appealing to the customers. We look at engagement rates. We look at having a mix of makeup, hair care. We're the only ones that do female intimate health, for example. We do supplements. I wanted to be the house, a one-stop shop of everything that a consumer wanted, where we had the reputation and credibility of telling the customer, we got you, we've done all the research, all you have to do is try us, and then we have customers that keep coming back. We have a very high repeat rate, so we know that it's working.
I mean, that's a very long and beautiful process, I must say. Now, I have a question. You know how, like, at the beginning of the interview, you did mention that you do choose products that are not as, I would say, that are good, that don't have a lot of toxic or harmful ingredients. So in light of that, how do you choose which brands for the...
We look at what's trending online, what's appealing to the younger audience, because mm-hmm. we believe that we have the finger on the pulse of the next generation of beauty consumers, especially in this region. So we do a lot of research, we get in touch with the brands, we understand their motivation to be here. Mm-hmm. Because if a brand wants to be successful in the US, then all their effort and investment is going to be focused on that territory. So we want to be very careful with who wants to make a play for the Middle East. We have something internally called the Secret Skin Center of Excellence. So we will guide you on your pricing, on your influencer strategy, on your PR, on your assortment mix, on how we create a 30, 60, 90 plan, 90-day plan, which is called a spotlight program. I took what I learned at Amazon and I just layered it with another additional leverage of experience. And built a community of influencers called the Secret Skin Society so that they could be our mouthpiece for authentic reviews. All of this comes together as a package. So when we go to the brand, we first do our due diligence to see, are they interested? Will this brand appeal to this audience? Have they spent enough in the last few years to build it in their parent country so that we can take them as a distributor and launch them here? So I have never launched a brand without talking to the founder because it's very important that we mirror the values of the brand and vice versa. We want, in the beginning, we did take a lot of brands because we wanted to build our portfolio. Now we're being very careful because we want to bet on brands that have the right commitment to the Middle East.
I mean, that is beautiful. The way that you guys choose the brands to collaborate with and partner with is very important. But how did Secret Skin expand into international markets?
So we went from the UAE to different regions. In fact, mm-hmm. we're working our way through and launching in Kuwait as well as in Qatar and Saudi. These are the markets that we're focusing on because we're a Middle Eastern company and we're a homegrown brand. We have brands from different parts of the world that we bring here, but Secret Skin doesn't exist outside of the Middle East. So our intention and focus is to expand in the region itself and to be mm-hmm. large and dominant in the Middle East itself. So up until January of this year, we were just B2C, pure play B2C. And then we pivoted into B2B. So now we work with, in fact, it was my dream to work with Unas at Altair, Watson's at Al-Futtaim, that concept store, Majid Al-Futtaim. Now we're going to start working with Faces for Shaloub. We've started working with Nysa, so apparel group. This required a very different kind of playbook, Farah, because when you're online, then the strengths that you need to demonstrate and the skills that you need to have and the capabilities that you need to have are very different to when you hit the inflection point. So that happened for us in Jan. We now have five physical locations. We will be 22 doors by Q1 next year, 22 doors.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Okay.
Yes. I want sustainable beauty to be accessible and mm-hmm. wellness to be accessible for everyone in the region. It's our mission because of what I went through to raise the awareness of women's health and wellness. And we're creating the demand which didn't exist. We're going to where the customers are, but it's also a lot of effort of education towards the customer and building your brand in an ecosystem where a lot of capital is required to acquire customers. We acquire on equity, not on discounting. We have, when we launched, we have gone live with a virtual Zoom concierge. So Farah, you could book a Zoom slot on the platform for personalized regimen consult. We went live with a plastic recycling program. Customers today like to be incentivized for pro-environment behavior by recycling their plastic bottles, coming back to the platform, earning loyalty points and eco rewards. We launched a subscription program. So we saw very high repeat rate of customers buying the same thing. So We feel that in 4 years, we've seen a lot of data around how there is a demand for this category. And we're happy to say that at the moment, we're leaders in this space.
I mean, you've done an amazing job. But you said something about sustainability. And we know that people right now, they look for luxury and sustainability. How do you approach the balance between, you know, sustainability and as well luxury?
I'm glad that you asked that question, because people know that one thing is sustainability and eco. So people associate with what's available in, let's say, ripe markets and farmers markets and things that are small batches that are made at home. And then you have the luxury products which are available in the retail stores. They cost a bomb.
Yeah.
And where is the in-between? So the in-between is a beautiful little positioning called Ecolux.
Okay.
Where brands are very mindfully creating packaging that appeals to the customer, as well as pricing it very competitively and has the efficacy of what you would expect from luxury brands, and yet it's more affordable. So my mission was to dispel the misconceptions on clean beauty as the following. One, that it wasn't easily available. One, that it didn't perform as well as derma products. Yeah. Then it was expensive, right? So these are the things that people believe is true for this category, but it's not. And that's what we've been trying to create for the last 4 years. So today, if you wanted something, we've done all the research for you. You can read about the ingredients. We have a very high bar on what stabilizing preservatives, for example, are put in the product, because we see all the certification. We're the only ones that have a very tight mandate on whether it's registered with the Dubai municipality. So the regulatory is very important to us. And when we launch the product online, we make it undergo campaigns so that the customers can discover, educate, and then convert.
I mean, that is for sure, that's amazing, because, you know, as you said, something that's very important is that we definitely do associate, you know, like skincare, very expensive,
yes,
you know, and that's more effective.
It's no longer true, because we must understand what region we're playing in. Mm-hmm. This ecosystem is very traditional. So in order to do well, you have to be a hybrid. You have to be digital and you have to be physical. Customers like the sensorial engagement and they like being educated. They like the DIY content. They like to see that this brand is doing so well on social media. And then they also want it to be affordable. So the Ecolux value proposition is right in the middle. And it allows early adopters to start as well. Because think about it. In a region where traditional retail is king, in order to be successful, you have to always stay ahead of whatever's happening in the region digitally. So you put together the capabilities and the opportunities for the customer to discover new products which fall within their affordability in order for them to try different brands, all available the same day because they're all locally fulfilled.
Well, today is, as you said at the beginning of the show, the fourth year anniversary for Secret Skin. But what is next for Secret Skin?
Well, we're expanding into different geographies. Mm-hmm. And now that we've seen that the category performs very well in the UAE, it's a small market. It was always a pilot market for us. English-speaking audience, also a customer that was very aware through their travel, both pre-COVID and now post, if we can call it that. They know what brands are doing well and they would like to have access locally to those brands and make sure that they're affordable too. So we've built a space in UAE. We've tested the market. We've won awards. We were in one of the world's most prestigious accelerator programs called Techstars. And we are now preparing a bridge to launch into Saudi. This year we'll see us opening Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi, and we will expand into the region with more partners and retailers next year. So the distribution piece, as well as spas, we're already working with Bulgari and Kintsugi in Abu Dhabi. We've started working with IHG Hotels. We want to eat the world. I mean, to have a mouthful of sky is what I meant.
Well, I mean, of course, we hope that too as well for you. And thank you so much for joining us and introducing us to this amazing brand that is affordable and sustainable. And if someone or if people want to actually figure out where is Secret Skin, where do you?
Well, you can reach me on LinkedIn, Anisha Oberoi. You can go and follow us on Instagram. It's at @the.secretskin. And you can see what our beautiful community creates for us in terms of content and all our product assortment on the gram.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for tuning in for the show. We go tomorrow, same time, same place, live at 10 a.m. Bye-bye.
Thank you.